The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously, especially when they give advice. Do not take Marshall's analogies literally, especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey. The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670.
That's the voice of Russell Dorsey joining us here on Rahimi and Harris. He said, I have something else to get to. What do you want to get to, Russ?
Can we define a thirst trap? Because I feel like in today's day and age,
oh my goodness,
we just label anything.
Can you tweet
trap.
Out that picture? Tell Russell what you said in the pre-show meeting today.
I was like, oh, Russ posted a thirst trap this morning on the gram.
It wasn't a thirst trap.
Russ, you have an eight pack.
Right, but that's a progress photo.
Check these out. See these? See these, boys? This is what I live with every day. I lather this up with Kiehl's in the shower.
I don't think it's bad to post a progress photo on my Instagram, and I don't think it's fair to call it a thirst trap. I chose the pants that I had on in the picture for a reason, because they were black. If I came through in that IG story with gray, that would be a thirst trap.
Like the gray sweats?
Exactly.
The way.
There was a reason I chose what I chose.
For people who don't understand what gray sweats and the implication is when you say gray sweats and put on gray sweats, how would you explain that to the listener?
No. I can do it.
It just now entered the control room.
There shows more
definition?
Dump them.
Definition?
Can I say that?
No!
I can say that. Mitch, I'm sorry if you get a call from the FCC.
Watch your pants.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We broadcast live from The Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Rahimi and Harris. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi.
Not a meaty version of the show today, though, is it?
We got a shorty today because we got Cubs baseball for you at 11:30. Ray Diaz is our producer, so is Robbie Triano. Yeah, that was also wild.
That's a great drop. That's a great drop.
All of that was unhinged.
Meat.
We have Brandon Fryer helping out as well. We also have our Twitch crew. Join us on Twitch, Chicago 670 The Score, twitch.tv is the prefix, and that is Connor O'Donnell, Jenna Duddleston, and Matt Anaya as we get ready for also a Bears OTA today where we don't think we're going to hear from Caleb Williams.
I mean, he could talk today, right? That could be a quick pivot.
I would hope so, and the reason I think this is an issue is because of this. That article that came out from Seth Wickersham, a lot of people consider, okay, it's old news, whatever, he's here now. Either way, the things that were said in the article when it came to how he felt alone, when you know how they finished last year winning only 5 games, when you know that they lost 10 straight, when you know that this is a new head coach, when you know that there's a lot that's happened in between now and then, when you know your dad said, and a lot of us have said it, that Chicago is a place where quarterbacks go to die. You were by yourself watching film. You didn't want to be here. The closer it gets to the season, every single day that Caleb Williams doesn't just nip this in the bud and address it and then move on so he can focus on the season, the worse it is. I want to address something if I'm the leader immediately. Hey, guys, I'm here. Yes. You know, this is a book that is coming out. I think you know how I feel about the city. I want to be here. I spoke to 2 high schools over the weekend. I am very excited about the change that has taken place. Let's go. That's what a leader does. So I sincerely hope that what we've heard about reports that he is not expected to speak today changes so that way everybody can move past this. Because as long as you don't speak, this is out there. It's not like this is a court case where people don't have to speak because of lawyers or something like that. This is a book that they knew was coming out. So if that's the case, then go ahead and address this in a positive manner that shows everybody in your actions. This happened. I am here. Let's go to work. Not doing that sends, I think, a bad message. So many times during the Ryan Pace administration, for example, I found myself saying, if you don't control your own narrative, it's left to people like us. And it's left to the public.
It's not just people like us. It's more about the general public, the nation at large. Everyone saw the story now. Everybody knows what happened. And I'm pretty much good with everything that was in the story because it takes us through a little bit of a behind the curtain look at what happened with Caleb Williams and his family leading up to the NFL draft, including probably the most pivotal point is when he went to Hallis Hall, met with the Bears organization, the people in charge, Ryan Poles and company, Kevin Warren, I'm assuming, George McCaskey even, and they said, we're going to make you the number one overall pick, and here's why we think this can work, and here's why this won't be a place where you come and die as a quarterback. And then he went back to his dad, who was ready to, quote unquote, nuke the city, whatever, however you want to put it, those are his words, not mine, to Seth Wickersham in that book that's forthcoming in the month of September. And he said, no, Dad, I can handle it. I accept this challenge. I am going to take the challenge in front of me, eat this piece of paper. If the message self-destructed, whatever happened, he went forward fully knowing what Chicago had been to quarterbacks of the past, but said he could be one to make a difference. Now, it didn't go that way in his rookie year, which is noted in the article. The biggest thing that I had an issue with was him studying film alone, and we can dissect, and we have dissected whether that was on him, whether that was on the organization,
now,
whatever.
Hold on. You're bringing up a lot of points here, and I think they deserve to be addressed individually.
And we will. But what I'm saying is, overall, after all that has happened, now we're at the point where, okay, it's out there, the information that this happened. The Bears may very well have been like, we're on a plan where he's not going to speak until the actual mini camp, the mandatory mini camp. That's cool, but guess what? You can pivot, and you as the quarterback, the franchise quarterback, the 1-1 of the Chicago Bears can say, I think this needs to be talked about. I want to set the record straight. I want to make sure that everybody understands where my heart, soul, and mind is on this specific issue and that it is in the rearview mirror. And you could do that with the local media. You could do that with the national media, however you choose to do it. But you got to do it, and you got to do it sooner rather than later.
And the fact of the matter is we do still talk about how Eli Manning wanted to avoid playing for the Chargers. We do still talk about what happened with John Elway. The top pick, the first overall pick of the Bears, the team in the number three market in the country, didn't want to be here. You bet your ass we're going to talk about it.
The difference, but though, the is that...
No, hold on. I'm we just are going to talk about it, and the quarterback should, too. And you do it today because that's your first opportunity, so you can work on the rest of the season.
I don't want to just lump it in with the Elway and the Manning thing because those guys got their way, and they got out. Caleb said, no, I will go to the Bears. That's the biggest difference between those two stories and this particular
story.
Yeah,
which is why he should speak today. Because then what are we talking about? We're talking about what he says about it, not this article. And that's the difference. So as long as that doesn't happen, this is what occurs. And again, things happen to you. How are you going to address them? But this didn't just happen to him. This is something where he and his dad willingly brought Seth Wickersham, the author of a book, on with them. We heard Seth say that last week. He's with them. They knew what was coming. This wasn't some secret. This wasn't some narrative they had to fix. They were the narrative. They knew this was going to be out there. So tell us what you think. You want to avoid us while we sit here and listen to all of this? Knowing that this was still something on your mind? Knowing you didn't sign your contract until July? Knowing you didn't want to go through those medicals at the combine? And I actually think that's a good thing for many reasons. But the point is all of these things can point to evidence that you didn't want to be here. So tell us so that way you can focus on the rest of the season and so can we.
I think we're still going to focus on the rest of the season eventually, but I think the longer that this lingers and hangs over him, the more it can be talked about. You're completely right when you talked about the narratives. The narratives out there are many, right? Everyone's got their own lens through which they look at the story. My issue is for Caleb Williams, he has a perfectly good, reasonable opportunity today at OTAs, to go ahead and set the record straight. Just set the record straight. No one has to assume anything.
Well, also the difference is I don't owe the Bears anything. They don't owe me a damn thing. So I'm here because we want to address this because it is out there. We want to address this because fans keep talking about it. And for the people who have a problem with us questioning things, I question stuff every day from 10 to 2 and then in the future. So if that's an issue for you, nobody is forcing you to listen either. But in these cases, when you have the power to go out there and change this story, again, you do it. You do it on the day that is the one you have in front of you because you need to focus on your new head coach, on your new offense, on your new team. So everybody knows where you are with this. Because if it really isn't an issue, you say, yeah, guys, it happened, but I want to be here and I'm here right now talking to you.
It's really that simple. That's the part.
That's what a leader and a QB1 does.
It's really that simple, and it could be so simple, but you'd rather make it hard. Loving you is like a battle.
Unless a lawyer tells me not to say something, let's figure out a way to say it in a productive manner.
But we both end up with scars. I get it. Listen, I want Caleb Williams to be in the best position going forward to continue his career in a better way than what we saw in his rookie season, where he was obviously feeling some type of way and understandable. And I think we understand it. I think the fans understand it. I think his teammates understand it. I think Ryan Poles understands it, which is why he went out and did all the things he did, including, you know, making official that Joe Tooney's going to get an extension. That's the latest news out of Hallis Hall. But in order to move on past this, you have to address it so then it can be something fully in the rearview mirror.
And to people texting in, I get it. I get why you're bothered. Like, your take on Caleb Williams is lazy. The record's already been set straight by Seth Wickersham. No, it hasn't, because this is new. So now that this is new, then it's on the part of the person we talk to set it straight. That's how it works when you want to actually collect information authentically. You go to the source himself. You talk to the author, and then you want to talk to the person who's available. Can be available as early as today. If anywhere else you saw this story where the first overall pick didn't want to come to the team and he hadn't spoken, if this were in any other city, you would have an opinion about this that was different. But because it's the team you cheer for, you want to try to agree with them. And I'm not here for that today.
Agree with who? Who do you think they want to agree with?
Authority?
Nah, you question authority always.
We do. That's why we're here.
Always question authority, especially when the track record is what it is with this particular organization, which I understand they're trying to change, and I'm with that.
This is an easy fix.
It's a layup.
This hour is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. When I heard that, I thought to myself, the best way to try to fix it is by talking today and to move forward. And then you actually are. But until that happens, it's not like we're going to forget. We are in the media in the city of Chicago. We know that that story came out last week. And the next time that you're available, later, whenever, you're going to get asked about it.
This is an abbreviated edition of Rahimi and Harris. We're talking about Caleb Williams and the fact that players are scheduled to speak today at Hallis Hall as part of OTAs. But Caleb apparently is not scheduled to speak as of now. We think that he should speak, say his piece on the forthcoming book and the quotes that were collected for that book by Seth Wickersham, Biography of a Quarterback, because he talked in that book about all the dysfunction and the fact that, one, he did not want to play for the Bears. Two, he connected with Kevin O'Connell in a way which he wished he could play for him. And three, once he did become the quarterback of the Bears and decided, yes, I do want to play for this organization, I do want to be the first overall pick in a Chicago Bears hat on draft night in Detroit, he ended up watching film by himself with no guidance. Those are his words, not mine.
And that would be a question I would want to ask. What is the film process, right?
What was it last year? What is it now?
What is happening right now? Like, what is that film process right now? What are you doing to help with that? What have you learned about the season where you feel like you need to say something? Also, if your dad is speaking in the public, you bet we're going to ask you about this. That's how it works. You're an adult. You have agency.
I was thinking about it the day that this all broke, right? And Seth Wickersham, I was like, what are the top three questions I would ask Caleb Williams if we had him right now on this show? And number one would certainly be, I need you to explain the film thing to me. I want to make sure I'm understanding what you did not get that you were looking to get. And what was the communication like between you and the coaches? That's like the number one thing for me. It's the number one thing.
All of it. All of it. You ask the individual that is being talked about by his parent in a national story, all of it. You don't just take anybody's word for it unless it's that actual person. And that's why this is so important. And it's even more important to do it as soon as you can so you can focus on the main thing, which is getting better and proving all of this wrong next season and proving the Bears right in the decisions they made to make sure it doesn't happen again. and that this isn't the place where quarterbacks go to die. Tell me all day how this is, how you're going to make it different. Show me and tell me how this isn't going to be the place where quarterbacks go to die, because you know it, you said it too. Your family did.
I think all of Chicago is in unison in believing the number one reason that's not going to be the case is two words: Johnson and Ben, and not in that order.
And I appreciate Karen 708. Not only should we allow Caleb to tell his side of the story, he should want to tell his side.
That's the bottom line here, and you have an opportunity to do it. And what I'm saying is, if the Bears as an organization have said, okay, this is who's going to speak today, and yeah, Caleb, we'll have you speak at the minicamp next month. My thing is, Caleb could easily tell them, hey, I want to address, you know, what's going on out here. Let me speak today.
And even Caleb knows how to address a narrative. He did it with the offensive line when he called it a stupid answer or a stupid discussion.
Stupid.
So I know you can, but every day that it gets closer to game one of this season against the Vikings is a day that's more inconvenient. Not just for us, but for you and your football team.
Hmm. Yeah, I understand some people don't care about this story. They're just happy to cheer for the Chicago Bears.
No, you can yell at me all you want, because I don't care either.
But the thing is, Caleb should just be like, you know what? I said what I said. I was scared about coming here. The concerns I had were real, but I love being here. I love the city of Chicago. I love their fans. And then we're all like, all right, we're going to throw all that away, and we love you, Caleb. He could do all of that today, and that's where it's like, why do that in a couple weeks? You can just do that
Robbie,
today.
I don't think he can say what you just said, because people are going to be like, yeah, you say that, but you literally didn't want to come here. And it'd be one thing if he didn't want to come here, and that article ended with the quotes about the Kevin O'Connell and all that stuff, but it's the quote about what actually happened last year with the film study that's going to be the one that people are going to be following up on, because that's after he decided that, yes, I will come and be a Chicago Bear. And then the reality was realized that, oh, this is bad.
But for this me, is your first overall pick since 1947, and he didn't want to be here.
But if I'm Caleb Williams, I'm using this as an opportunity for, like, PR. It's yes. So that's why, like, the film stuff, like, that can be addressed. But this is my opportunity to be like, you know what? I love the city of Chicago. I love the fans. I want to play here. What I said is what I said. I had concerns, but I want to be here.
Yeah,
that's
we
what
know
I'd use
how,
that for.
We know how he can say it, but here's the issue is right now the headline is you're not speaking after this story came out.
I don't think he can use the media to his favor.
That's
what I think he should do.
That's what I've been saying.
Yes, exactly.
I think we can all agree this is
a
proactive PR layup.
There's a proactive way to say this, and then you come out as a leader and you again prove who you are and that you're QB1 and this is why and how. But until then, it sits with us. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. We do five on it. Talk Cubs, White Sox, and more next.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's time for five on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got five on.
It is time for five on it. It is a little early today because we were getting you ready for Cubs baseball at 11:30. Should we address the lineup real quickly since it's out?
I know I'd like to. You know I want to address the lineup.
Yeah, because your man's is batting cleanup. What is it?
Listen, what was it? 2 days ago I said lineup comes out for the Cubs. They should bat Ian Happ leadoff, Kyle Tucker second, Seiya Suzuki third, Pete Crow Armstrong fourth, Dansby Swanson fifth, Michael Bush sixth, Nico Horner catcher, Matt Shaw. Guess what? They almost got it right. He's got Ian Happ playing left field leading off. He's got Kyle Tucker DHing for a second straight day.
Good.
And batting second.
Good.
Seiya Suzuki. Suzuka, like a bazooka, because that's what he hits. He hits with a bazooka.
That was your Southern coming out there.
Seiya Suzuki batting third and playing right field. Pete Crow Armstrong in the cleanup spot. Doesn't have the righty protection behind him. Instead, he's got Michael Bush, who does well against righty, so I get why he's in there.
Yeah, Max Meyer is the starter for the Marlins today.
And then you've got Dansby Swanson batting sixth, playing short, Nico Horner playing second and batting seventh, Miguel Amaya is in the eight hole playing catcher, and then Matt Shaw holding it down after back-to-back multi-hit games at third base.
Yeah, this is the we got everything right against our opponent last night lineup, so let's do some things with this one. Let's get a little weird. And then If you want to get even more weird, how about you have Michael Busch learn how to hit left-handed pitching in the major leagues?
Well, he'd have to get more bats against lefties for that to happen.
Yeah, that might be a thing they should try.
All right, Layla and Marshall just gave you the lineup for today's game, but let's go back to yesterday's game. What was the best aspect of the Cubs' 14-1 win over the Marlins?
It was the fact that they had offensive outputs that rivaled their best of the season. It was 21 hits. It was 14 runs. It was doing the thing that you should do against a team like this. Everybody eats, and that was the idea. Ian Happ was back in left field. He was leading off. I didn't have a problem with that. Seiya Suzuki, again, looking comfortable. Kyle Tucker had a day when you consider what he did, producing 3-for-4. He hit his 11th home run of the season. Seiya hit home run number 12. Like we said, everybody ate in that lineup. So that was it. It wasn't just that there were individual performances up and down that were solid. It was that, you know, if you're measuring the success of your team via blowout wins, that is one that was a no-doubter and also a progress check on hitter confidence. So mission accomplished.
I'm going in a different direction, completely different direction. I'm not focused on the 14. I'm focused on the one. Jameson Taillon. Yes, he gave up another home run, but it was only one home run, unlike the three or the four he gave up in the previous two starts.
Right.
For him to go 7 innings and kind of take a step closer to what you want him to be, which is the best pitcher on the staff with no Shota Imanaga and no Justin Steele, he did that, and he gave them length. A season high tying 7 innings. He only gave up 4 hits. Now, he did walk 3 batters, which is not advised, but he was able to maintain once he got a lead. And I just love the fact that Taillon understands that it's on him now to be that guy right now, the veteran in the rotation that needs to get it done each and every time. And he took a big step in that direction by going 7 innings of one run ball.
Now, Jameson Taillon, my biggest concern too was, what was he doing with 2 strikes against some of these hitters? What was the put away pitch? Why were you leaving the long ball out there for people with their final strike of the at bat? So he's an approach guy. You know that he's going to make an adjustment. He casually works on 9 pitches, I think, at a time. Might be exaggerating, but it pretty much is. The man has an arsenal. Like, you're not worried about a third pitch with him, like say you are with a guy like Ben Brown. You're worried about one of his secondary, tertiary, like 4, 5, 6 pitches that he wants to throw that's working for him in a given day. 5
on it. Fill in the blank. This Cubs team is the best team in Chicago sports since blank.
This is an easy one for me. Based on what I've seen since I've been here, 2021 Chicago Sky. Period.
The championship team.
The championship team. Candace Parker and thems beating the Phoenix Mercury to win their first ever WNBA Finals. That's where we are, because this is a team with championship considerations. And if you look between then and now, who else did you think, oh, they could win a championship? This Cubs team could win a championship. I have a better guess on that, a better prediction, a better read on that once the trade deadline passes. But as of now, this is the best team since that team.
I think it's the best team since, I know that that's a championship team. I was also thinking about the, I think we're at the hopes and dreams stage of the 2021 White Sox, where you know you've got a bevy of talent and you know you have a team that can win your division. You just don't necessarily know if you've got the championship team. But either way, like far and away, the Sky championship team is the last one that we have to talk about. So I just don't know how close we are to that level of a team again. I can't be as confident about this team as I was that Sky team.
Are you saying that the White Sox were... This team is way better than that White Sox team. Here's why.
I remember being thrilled about the acquisitions that the White Sox were making at the time.
I just remember that I looked at their division and no other team in the AL Central had a winning record. And I was like, this isn't for real. And guess what? They got to the playoffs. It was very much not for real.
Right. But when it came to where we are right now in the respective season, that's where I was at. Candace Parker, you knew what was happening on the Sky. Like, you knew. But in this case, I'm not there yet. But I was excited about the acquisitions, just like I was. I knew that they could win the division.
Kyle Tucker is their Candace Parker. Kalia Copper, that's PCA. You rolling with me?
Kalia Copper was the finals MVP.
And she, guess what? She's took it to the next level. Guess who's taking it to the next level this year?
Before we go to Marshall Analogy Land, what is the next question? 5
on it. White Sox outfielder Luis Robert Jr. addressed being at the center of trade rumors by saying this to reporters via translator Billy Russo Tuesday.
I think right now, as my season is going, I don't think anybody's going to take a chance on me. You know, I just focus on, you know, in trying to get better. I can't think in anything else.
Will there be a lack of interest in Robert Jr. if he doesn't turn things around by the July 31st trade deadline? Or do you envision teams wanting to take on a restoration project on La Pantera, even if he doesn't show improvement?
Yeah, there will be many, many, many front offices who are interested in saying, oh, I know why he's bad. Look at the players he's playing with. He doesn't really have true protection in that lineup, and he just needs a change of scenery. I can completely see there being just plenty of interest, multiple teams wanting his services to add to their team as a third outfielder come the trade deadline. And the best part about it is they're probably going to get him at a discount because he will outperform what he costs in prospects if he continues to play at a sub 200 level.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the Sox are pigeonholed into selling low on Luis Robert, and I don't think that this is unique to the White Sox. Unfortunately, a lot of players that you know have star power lose it when they're on a team that can be discouraging. He played for, the record-wise, the worst team of all time. So when you consider that, what is the effect on an individual you know to be wildly talented? I think there is very much a argument to be made that a change of scenery would benefit Luis Robert to an extent that even we don't fully comprehend. So I just feel terrible for him when I hear comments like that because he's self-aware. He knows what's going on. But is there hope in yourself that you can achieve that goal? You know, that's the part of this that I think about the most in this case. When you hear sad quotes from talented people, it's an indication of not only themselves, but what's going on the team as well and what their relative value is to the league.
Maybe Adrian Hauser can help bring his trade value up. Shout out to him.
Credit to Adrian Hauser. Gets the call, I'll be there.
Innings of zero run ball.
It was more impressive than the guy who gets called off the street to be the emergency goalie.
I mean, this guy has major league pitching experience. He just hadn't done it since last year with the Mets, I believe. So
yeah, he was with the Round Rock Express.
The Round Rock Express, my goodness. Triple A stand up.
Oh, yeah. Pacific Coast League.
PCL.
Okay, now that Russ Dorsey isn't here, can we all admit that the shirtless pic that he took yesterday and posted on Instagram was a thirst trap? And if you haven't seen it, I don't know if I should recommend or not recommend them to see it.
It was a recommend story. Recommend it to the ladies. It already went away, didn't it?
Yes. So his shirt is off.
It's on his highlights.
His shirt is off. He has black pants. He's flexing into the mirror. Is that a thirst trap?
It is 100% a thirst trap. I don't know why he thought it wasn't a thirst trap just because he didn't have gray sweatpants on. There are different levels of thirst trapping. He was at level one. It's very basic.
That was not level
him.
One.
It was level.
Level one is like standing in a suit, talking casually, like, you know, like, oh, how did this picture happen to me? Where I'm so candid.
Wait. So you can have a thirst trap in which you're fully clothed. Is that what you're admitting right now? On the record.
I had a mask on. Marshall said about a picture I posted in like 2021 where I have a coat and am very fully
clothed. Y'all, she was trapping.
In a mask.
She was trapping.
I'm like, what are you in love with there? Your own imagination?
Start a conversation with me. I might take this mask off. What's good?
Oh, man. This is the opposite of that. Mask off. A lot of mask off.
Shirt off.
Also, the fact that he said, you can put this in my, or you see this in my highlight with the three flexing arm emoji.
It was the definition of a thirst trap.
Thank you. We're all Ray. You're in agreement as well.
I'm gonna say this. Okay, you know how every company out here has an app and it's like Plus and you know Apple Plus, Apple Care Plus, whatever. I don't know. I'm
ESPN
just making things
Plus.
Up. ESPN Plus. That's a better one for what we do. I'm gonna say it's a thirst trap minus because Russ did convince me that he did do it for showing them gains. He did convince me.
Where's the before that?
I get that, but he did it quick, and it was on the Instagram story, and it disappeared. But you did say it's in the archives, I guess.
Would you feel differently if it was on the grid? If it was not a story and on
yes,
the grid,
then it's 100% a thirst trap.
Huh.
Plus, thirst trap plus versus thirst trap minus. I'm giving him a thirst trap minus in this situation.
I think he may be trying to hold himself accountable. And so maybe that's why you posted.
I want them before pictures the next time he tries to throw that at us.
But either way.
I'm also.
The first thing I described it as was a thirst trap.
I'm also giving him thirst trap minus because the black pants versus gray sweatpants argument also I think is
that
valid.
That resonated with you?
I think it's valid.
Hmm. Didn't even realize like that was a thing until he said it.
You're the only woman who didn't realize that was a thing.
Meat?
Let me tell you.
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Hmm. We'll agree to agree. We'll agree to agree.
It's just not. It wasn't. It didn't come to mind.
Okay.
Actor and Southside native George Wendt, who played Norm in the hit television sitcom Cheers, which aired on NBC for 11 seasons, died at age 77 on Tuesday. What celebrity death in your lifetime has hit you the hardest?
George Wendt, maybe he's up there just because of the reliable nature of his presence. You know, like that was kind of the idea with Cheers, right? You go, everybody knows your name, you know who you're going to see there, you're happy to see them. And also just a very talented actor. You know, the super fan's obviously part of it, and he embraced that bit. And to be a working actor that famous for that long, I think anytime somebody has a career like that, not only does it deserve credit, but it deserves appreciation for what we consume with it. So it was one that I noted. I think Val Kilmer was one where I was surprised because he didn't seem that much older than me, and it was so unfortunate, just the circumstances. And when I think about watching that person over time and just how much time you spent watching his movies, so that was one that affected me, I guess. I don't know. Some of them have just been like, they die way too soon. So I have various thoughts on why a celebrity passing would mean something significant in life.
So for me, this was an easy one because it's not that long ago. Give me the guy who gave you Thurgood Marshall, the guy who gave you Ernie Robinson, the guy who gave you Jackie Robinson, the guy who gave you Jim Brown. Give me Mr. Biopic himself. Give me the Black Panther Chadwick Boseman, because that one was so sudden. This is a man who was younger than me, who was afflicted by colon cancer and died, and no one even knew he was sick.
Right.
And he was just gone. And he had the brightest of futures. And I was just like, yo, we got to start taking this health thing seriously. Because if that man, and all you heard was just so many great things about him from his peers, obviously from fans, man, it's funny because a celebrity death, someone you don't even know, shouldn't even affect you like that. But I know people who were crying when Aaliyah died. That was probably my second one, if I'm going back in time. Remember when Michael Jackson died? Remember when Prince died? I mean, there's a litany of people who you don't know the effect that they have had positively on your lives until they're gone. Not even your real family members, but they feel like family.
Yeah, or you just affix hopes, or you feel hopeful for them. And I feel like that comes at an emotional toll as well. I also think with Chadwick Boseman, unfortunately, just another example of something that is a really disturbing trend, that colorectal cancer in Americans under 50 is growing at an exponential rate. So much so where the insurance companies even agreed, and you know they hate to spend money, that people should get screened for it sooner in life. It's scary how many people I know, even in their late 30s, who have had it.
And coming back from that one is very, very difficult.
Mike Lowe from WGN, you know, credit to him for showing his journey and his battle on TV. Thank goodness he's with us and is able to talk about it the way he can. It's terrifying. And frankly, we don't know what chemicals are affecting us, how and why, and what's mass used in fertilizer, what you're eating is eating. So I think when you consider all of that, it's very scary. So yeah, I think Chadwick Boseman was one where you're just pausing because life is way too short. I want to go where everybody knows my name.
Yo.
And they're always glad you came.
Cheers was phenomenal, and his character was amazing, George Wendt. So shout out to the Chicago native.
Yeah, very, very sad, but a wonderful career and one we should appreciate and celebrate today. We have more to come here on Rahimi and Harris on The Score. We have more Cubs baseball to discuss. You heard the Cubs lineup. It's already out. We'll go over it again, but we'll talk about what worked with the last one and also delve into a little bit more, I think, the Jameson Tyrant adjustments, because let's appreciate a guy who can throw a million different pitches and see something work in his favor in the next game. That's all next as we get you ready for Cubs baseball at 11:30 on The Score.
You're listening to Raheemi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, and it's been a big inning in the middle of the lineup doing some damage.
The offense is cooking. Here's a deep drive to right center. It's got a chance. Gone. Seiya Suzuki with a two-run homer. Two down, nobody on. Cubs leading comfortably. Ground ball, one hopper to birdie. Throw to first. Cubs win by a score of 14-1.
That was Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call. Zach Zaidman in South Florida as well. This is Raheemi and Harris on the Score. We get you ready for Cubs baseball. It is an early one as they try to take 2-3 from the Marlins at 11:30 is your pregame. And until then, you have us. Mike Florio is at 11 with the latest NFL news. But we did not start our show talking about the Cubs because the Bears have media availability today. And we address them a little bit in our Five on It segment. But in reality, what we saw last night out of the Cubs was exactly what they should do against a Marlins team with this offense. That was full potential out of everybody up and down the lineup. 21 hits, scatter for 14 runs. That's how you get it done against an ailing Marlins team. And that's exactly what occurred yesterday. Lineup back at full strength, and we saw it work. I do think there was a little bit of tinkering with the lineup as well. It's something that we thought we might see. Ian Happ was back in the leadoff spot. But then you had Seiya Suzuki and right. Kyle Tucker was your DH. I think that did make a difference for him just to give him that break. Then it was Carson Kelly, Dansby Swanson, and then you had Nico Hoerner, Justin Turner, and Matt Shaw. And Matt Shaw, again, doing what he can. 2-for-5. He also had an RBI double, so it was very much nice to see.
Listen, this was the prototypical what you expected. And we go back to about a week and a half ago, we talked about this stretch. You've got the Marlins, a last-place team, bookended around a last-place White Sox team. And here we are. They are 6-2 in these eight games so far. A chance to, well, they've already fulfilled what you guys said was the expectation, which is 6-3. But they can go 7-2 with a win today, and that would go a long ways away towards what I told you should be a 15-6 stretch when you talk about playing the Reds for three, the Rockies for three, the Reds for three more, and then the Washington Nationals, a stretch of 21 games against teams who were below 500. And the difference in that 7-2 and the 6-3 is if they go 7-2 today, they only need to go 8-4 the rest of the way. If they go 6-3, they got to go 9-3 the rest of the way.
But according to the Marshall scale of importance?
Well, let me tell you why it's important, because this is where you make hay. When I say make hay, this is when you get as far over 500 as you can. A 15-6 stretch puts you 9 games more over 500 than you were at the start of the stretch, whereas a 14-7 stretch only puts you 7 games over. Doesn't sound like much, but this is what we're talking about when you get to the end of the season as to who might be the number one seed in the National League, and I think that should be the focus for the Cubs, not just winning the division, but making a run at that number one seed, knowing how rough the waters are in the National League West.
Put the money in the bank, widen the gap when you don't have to. That's what you're trying to say, right?
Especially when you have pitching issues like you do right now with injuries. If you can continue to build on that with people hurt, with no Shota Imanaga for the foreseeable future, yeah.
Right, and we know that he is doing some throwing, I believe, off of a mound. That was the expectation. Taylor McGregor touched on that in one of the broadcasts that was very recent. I don't recall, but nobody's looking at the standings with any sort of intention right now on May 21st. But when you consider that the Cardinals, after their little hot streak, are two games back of you, then, yeah, this is the time where you make hay. Also, when you work on things, you take advantage of that playing free and easy, swinging the bat free and easy, knowing that other people are going to pick up where you leave off when it comes to that part of it. And that's what I really appreciated about what we saw yesterday. That is what good teams do.
I love the fact that every single player, except for Vidal Brujan, I'm sorry, Mr. Pinch Hitter, had a hit in that game. And I was worried that that wouldn't be the case because Ian Happ, who led off, he was 0-for-5 in this game until he finally got the RBI single late to become part of that hit club, if you will. The 21 hits, tying a season high. They also put up the 14 runs. But in the stretch of eight games, they've outscored their opponents, the Marlins and the White Sox, 58-26. That's not just beating them. That's adding to your margin as far as run scoring is concerned, plus 32. It's been what you expected. The two games that they lost a 3-1 game and they lost an 8-7 game. Other than that, it's been pretty much ho-hum.
It has been. I know Kyle Tucker spoke to Taylor McGregor on the marquee broadcast after the game. That was big for him just as far as shortening what relative little slump he has. Again, not a concern. But the reason he doesn't make it a concern, comments like these. Let's listen.
I feel a little bit better. I started to feel a little bit better probably my second at-bat yesterday just to get a feeling in the box that I felt like I could work with. I've been kind of searching for that for a little bit. But I just feel like I've, you know, stayed better through the ball and directional and everything, you know, the last, you know, 5 to 8 at-bats or so. So I feel like that's something I could work with and, you know, build off of. I don't know if it's necessarily a pitch or something. It's more just a feeling in the box in terms of whether it's your stance or hands position or hips or just your direction that you're trying to go with the ball with the intent. And I've been kind of had like a numbness feeling for a little bit while just trying to search for that. But I felt a lot better recently and just trying to build off that.
Let me tell you why I love listening to that, putting into context with if you listen to the games right here on 670 The Score with Pat and Ron and Zach Zaidman. Ron talked about it 2 days ago about how he said, oh, he looks better at the plate. He's hitting the ball hard. And then yesterday it was like, oh, he put some air under that one. And that's when he hit the home run off of the lefty. I just think Ron Coomer saw it coming and you could kind of sense that it wasn't going to last very long because that's how good of a hitter he is. But to come out and spank the ball the way he did yesterday, he just reminds you that, yeah, even when he's slumping at any moment, he could become very dangerous at the plate.
Well, and it's really not that much of a slump. Like, that's the point. With a guy like this, the word is relative and the word is not the same. You know, it's not an over for an extended amount of time. So again, when you needed him, he was there. And you see it whenever you see the power start to creep in, you know, the triple to the corner, for example, in right field that he hit prior to this. And thank you to the texter for pointing this out. 847, Shota will throw at the end of next week. Yeah, I knew there was some sort of timetable established. I was watching and taking, I think, something else down at the same time. So thank you. Point being, we do have some sort of timeline on Shota, which is a good thing. But regardless, when you consider that Jameson Taillon is making the adjustments that he talked about and trying to tinker the way he has, and now you've got Cade Horton on the mound today, an opportunity for Cade Horton to continue to work on the repertoire, work on the approach, get right. This is a good time to do so. Exactly.
So he's got two appearances. He's 2-0. He's got a chance to get off to a 3-0 start. In one of those games, he didn't even start.
And he got the Wrigley debut out of the way for Crosstown, so that's a good thing. So Cade Horton is taking the mound. Cubs baseball is at the bottom of the hour here on The Score. And coming up next, we have some NFL news that is breaking with owners voting on things in Minneapolis, rule changes, stuff like that today. We'll get the latest from Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk coming up next.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
He joins us via the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. And we are happy to have him on this day where the NFL is making news. Then again, we can say that almost every day. It is Mike Florio. He is the head and creator of Pro Football Talk. He is at Pro Football Talk on X. He is also always skipping his lunch or pushing it back later for us on a Wednesday. So we got to ask you, Mike, before we get into all the news, what's on the docket for lunch today?
This week has been so busy. It's one of those, whenever I have a window to eat, I grab whatever I can find. I have no idea what's lurking in the kitchen. I might have to get creative. I might have to actually leave the house to the dismay of my neighbors and other, you know, community members.
No, Mike, it's that kind of week. You got to go treat yourself and just get the DoorDash, Uber Eats, whatever. Order pizza if you want. Just order something, stay in your house, get comfortable, man.
No. I don't like people coming to my house.
Oh.
I don't like anyone knowing where I live. We live in a spot where it's just right on the edge of, you know, civilization, and it's hard to find, and I like it that way. So we don't do food delivery because I don't want people knowing where I live.
You're one of those rare off-the-grid but on-the-grid people.
Yeah.
I'm basically a hermit.
Amazed by those. The people
I once
who like
read
to
an article about the terms of someone's house arrest and what they were allowed to do and not allowed to do, and it dawned on me, I'm basically on self-imposed house arrest.
Or you've been quarantining before it was actually quarantining?
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Well, let's
or it's continued. Like for 5 years, like that created a snap in my existence. And it's got, you know what? I kind of like staying home and not dealing with people. And I think the people kind of like me staying home and not dealing with them.
There's a general segment of the population that has lived that life since the pandemic. So I get you, Mike. I get you. Looking at what we expected to happen today, and all the talk was that the tush push was going to be banned. But yet here we are. And my understanding is the vote failed.
It's been a bad week for the commissioner. He had three things he wanted to push through. One, player participation in the Olympic flag football tournament in 2028. Check. Two, this Lions proposal to reseed the playoff tree, which had been instigated by the league and which the commissioner wanted. We reported that back after the meetings that happened in Palm Beach late March, early April. That lost. And now the ban of the tush push, which... it felt like there was a groundswell to get this thing out of the game, to basically rewind the rule book to 2005 when no pulling or pushing of the runner was allowed anywhere on the field. That rule change as of 2006 planted the seed. It was almost like the 17-year locust. It took 16 years for the Eagles to figure out, hey, we can use this as a sword. We can weaponize this in our playbook. It felt like it was going to be gone, but at the end of the day, by only two votes, which means they're probably going to try it again next year. Somebody high up in the league doesn't like this play, and it probably is the guy whose signature is on every football. I'm surprised they did it. I was kind of hoping they would get rid of it because I was hoping the Eagles would line up in a quarterback sneak every single play and gain 5 yards every single play because it wasn't going to change the effectiveness of the quarterback sneak. Sanity prevailed. If you want to beat them, you better come up with a way to stop it or come up with a way to run it yourself.
Well, I understand. If I'm George McCaskey and I know my team can't run it, then yeah, of course I'm voting against it because it's a competitive advantage I gain by banning it. So that I get. As a football fan, I absolutely think it's a football play and it should be in the game because it was something creative. It was a correct use of your talent to get a desired result. That's the part of this that I crack up at is, there are teams who can run it and there are teams who can't. And for those who can't, I think it's hilarious that they're allowed to even vote on it like this. It's basically like throwing a pity party publicly.
Yeah, it was such an apparent attack on a play that, and it's twofold. We've seen other trends in the NFL and it's a copycat league. So if somebody does something well, the other teams have two challenges. One, how can we do that thing that everyone else is doing well? And two, how can we stop that thing? I remember with the Wildcat and the read option 12, 13 years ago, there was a concerted effort by defensive coordinators to figure out how to stop this thing that had become unstoppable, and they did. So instead of trying to figure it out in the traditional way, it just felt like a petty attack on the Eagle signature play. And what bothered me was they were coming up with bogus reasons. It almost felt like our current political environment where people just say whatever they have to say, truth be damned. Oh, it's a safety issue. Okay, where's your safety data? Well, let me see. I don't have any. But you know, it could be a safety issue. It could be a safety issue. So that's good enough. Oh, and by the way, it's not a football play. Well, what do you mean it's not a football play? Well, it doesn't look like a football play. Well, what's not football about it? It's a football. It's 11 players on each side. They're lined up legally, and they run the play. So I didn't like that aspect of a moving goalpost that was trying to hide the real agenda. We don't like this play. And I think the catalyst was the exchange that happened during the NFC Championship when the Commanders repeatedly jumped offside at the point where referee Sean Hockley had to say to the Commanders, if you do it again, we're going to award a touchdown. I think that made someone decide, we got to get rid of this thing. That's an embarrassing sequence. Even though it wasn't the Eagles' fault, we just got to get rid of this thing so we don't have that kind of weird moment in a game where 50 million people are watching.
Well, I also want to ask about this. This segment, by the way, with Mike Florio, brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I think when it comes to the playoff seeding aspect, especially from what we saw in the NFC North, for example, and what we see out of other divisions, I'm looking at the South, it makes sense to reseed. I assume in the same way it would mean that a division winner doesn't get a home game and they're mad about that. But as a fan, I think that that is something you want to see happen because it's not fair that you're rewarding teams that aren't nearly as good as others.
The potential unfairness has been there for years. I first made a big deal out of it after the Saints had to go play a wild card game in Seattle when Seattle was 7-9 and the Saints were 11-5. And the Seahawks won. That was the Beastquake game. And the argument was, well, the Seahawks are the better team. No, you play that game in New Orleans, and the Saints are going to win. That's the value of home field advantage. But this wasn't an equity thing. This was the league office instigating the Lions to make this proposal because the commissioner believes that if you seed 1-7, regardless of division championship, you will make the late season games more exciting as teams jockey for their spots. I don't know that that logically flows, but that's what it's about. Making the Week 18 games better so we have better games we can move to this window and that window and standalone here. And, you know, this past year, the Week 18 slate from 1 o'clock through 7:25 Eastern on the final Sunday, it wasn't very compelling. So I can understand the idea, but it doesn't make any sense logically. And here's the problem. If you are going to make your playoff seeding depend only on record in comparison to other teams from your conference, you need to take a step back and look at the scheduling formula. We need to have more games in the conference. Maybe we need to have fewer inter-conference games and more games against the other teams that we're ultimately competing with for the playoff positioning. Maybe we need to get rid of the two games against every division rival. Maybe we should play 15 games against the other conference teams and just two interconference games. I think if they're going to do this again next year, and I have a feeling they'll regroup and try it again, it needs to be coupled with a way to look at the scheduling formula to ensure that those final standings better reflect competition in the conference. Remember when the college football conferences were small enough that you could just played every other team in the conference?
Yeah, you might miss one or two teams.
That's the easiest way to determine the champion. Whoever's got the best record after each team has played every other team, boom, that's fair. I don't know that they'll get there, but they need to do something other than what they're doing.
Mike, you basically want to do the opposite of what the NHL and Major League Baseball has done in recent years and limit the exposure of home fans to teams from around the league every 3 years. That's what you're saying, right? I mean, I don't hate the idea because the NFL is such a different product than Major League Baseball and the NHL in terms of how many games there are and how often you see teams. But Major League Baseball had the big problem where you weren't going to get a chance to see a star from a certain city, say Shohei Ohtani, because of the way the schedule was set up if you were an American League team. And I like how they've solved that problem. But I think you're right because the NFL is so different in that the way we see stars and teams and individual players is not the same. They don't need the star power that these other leagues need to be showcased around the country and beyond the border, honestly, if you're talking about Canada as well.
In 2002, when the Texans joined the NFL and the league reconfigured into 8 four-team divisions, they came up with the scheduling formula that made variety a key. And every 8 years, if you're a Bears season ticket holder, every 8 years, you will have seen every other team in the NFL come to Soldier Field. Okay, that was the approach. But there's a problem with it. And the problem's there even without the reseeding. I think the reseeding brings the problem into focus. Look at the NFC North last year. The NFC North played 8 of its 17 games against the 4 teams of the AFC South and the 4 teams of the NFC West, which was down last year. So what a shock. You produce 3 playoff teams out of the NFC North. This year, whoa, hang on. 4 teams of the AFC North, 4 teams of the NFC East. All of a sudden, 8 of the 17 games become much more difficult. And it's based on this two-pronged rotation where you just click every year. We go from the AFC North to the AFC South to the AFC West, and then you click the NFC through the other 3 divisions. 8 of your 17 games are tied to that rotation, which is premised on long-term variety. And if we're going to say We're going to rank teams 1 through 7 based upon their record. They've got to take a look at this whole idea of, well, we want to have variety. No, at some point we need to have fairness. Otherwise, we don't get a true snapshot when you look at how those teams are ranked. Look, I think the Rams have a great chance this year to be the number one seed because the other three teams in their division aren't great right now. And they're going to play the four teams of the NFC South and the four teams of the AFC South. They can fatten up their record with 8 games against teams from 2 of the worst divisions in football right now.
Well, I also think that if that were to happen, there's an easy argument to be made for what the owners want the most, and that's that 18th game. You know, that's the other piece of this, is that there's a way to say that extra game will guarantee a more accurate seating process. It will get you from point A to B. It will solve a lot of the concerns about inventory for star power, for example. It gives you that extra national game. As an advocate for players, I'm against it. But if you're trying to use that argument in this discussion, I don't know why they wouldn't vote for it in concert with that concept then.
Well, the 18th game is coming. The question is, do the players agree to it before the current CBA expires and get some significant concession, or do they wait until early 2031, get locked out like they did in 2011, and eventually, when it's time to start missing game checks, agree to 18 games? 18 is coming. I think 20, at some point down the road, under the same logic they're using to go from 16-4 to 17-3, now to 18-2. The preseason games stink. We've had 20 total games forever. It was 14-6 back when I first discovered the NFL. It's still 20 games. Let's just have no preseason and play 20. But, you know, as we come up with different ways to prioritize the teams when the season is over, that all becomes relevant. And that all assumes the league office cares. I'm not sure that the commissioner cares about this idea of the schedule should have more conference games. You win your games. You win your games or you lose your games. Your schedule is what it is. And 1 year you get lucky and 1 year you don't. And that's just the way it works year in and year out. So regardless, I think this effort that was started by the Lions isn't going to go away. The push against the tush push isn't going to go away. And it's going to give us stuff to cover and follow and talk about next year for the March meetings and then possibly the May meetings.
Mike, you talked about 18 and then 20. If you go back to 18, we got to go back to a 2-bye system. And if you go to 20, you definitely have to have 2 byes.
You have to have 3 potentially at that point. Just kick it out to mid February in the middle of sweeps
or make
the Super Bowl.
That holiday weekend be Super Bowl Sunday and then everybody gets the Monday off.
Bingo.
Here's the problem. They want to land the Super Bowl badly on President's Day weekend. Right. And under the current formula, like once every 7, 8, 9 years, it's going to anyway. If you add in a second bye, because one of the arguments for 18 games is, hey, it's perfect. We're going to get President's Day weekend Super Bowl. Well, it's not going to happen every year. It's going to overshoot from time to time. But if you add a second bye, then you have to ask the real question of, do we go back to the days prior to 2001 when the season started on Labor Day weekend? And they got away from that because people aren't home on Labor Day weekend. The ratings were lower on Labor Day weekend. And at some point, I think they're going to revisit that and start on Labor Day weekend because now it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
If you're at the barbecue or the beach. You watch the game right there.
Christmas Day told us that, right?
There. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right about Christmas Day and Thanksgiving and whatever else they want to take over. Another thing that was discussed, and it got a lot of discussion between our show and Mully and Haw, the other show you appear on, in transition before we started, was what is important to the owners when it comes to the participation in the Olympics in flag football. And you hear guys like Justin Jefferson talk about how much it would mean for him to represent his country. David Haw made the excellent point that there is an injury risk here when you consider it. But then that got me thinking, what matters more to the owners? Is it the injury risk to a player, or is it the potential to, again, grow the game, especially that international piece with having the Olympic exposure?
Well, when I was at the league meetings in March, and they do a Monday night cocktail party, if you're smart and you sidle up to the right people who have had the right amount of the products being disseminated by the open bar, you can pick up some things. And it was clear to me that there was tension between the league office and the owners about this NFL active player participation in the Olympics. Because if I'm an owner of a team, first of all, the fan base of that team should be very glad I'm not. But if I'm an owner of a team, I don't want any of my players out there taking unnecessary risks. You look at the standard player contracts, you've got a laundry list of things you can't do because they want to reserve the right to inflict injury on you within the confines of their practices and games, not when you're not working. So I thought there would be more pushback against this. And I think there probably was, but at the end of the day, 32-0 vote, unanimous vote. I think they got everybody on board because when you limit it to one player per team, it's easier to sell the owners on the idea that Olympics equals greater international exposure equals greater international interest in football equals greater money for you. And it's easy to put that together. And really, if you're looking at a maximum of one per team, 10 players on the U.S. men's flag football team, how many guys are you really going to put at risk in any given Olympics for however long this lasts? And it only lasts 1 week of the Olympics, not the full 2 weeks, because there's only six teams. So if it's 2028, 2032, 2036, I think they're going along with it for now in the interest of this broader 100-year plan for global domination. And I know it'll never happen, but if you'd asked me back in the mid-70s, will football ever overtake baseball in the United States, I'd have scoffed. So I think they're hoping to truly globalize the sport. And if they can make it as popular elsewhere as it is here, billion-dollar business becomes trillion-dollar business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you can tell that that is the growth mindset that they have. I know that you probably heard about the Seth Wickersham story, Mike, that came out about Carl Williams and all the things he said before leading up to the point where the Bears drafted Caleb Williams. In there were valid pieces of information from Seth via Carl about Caleb wanting to play for Kevin O'Connell. That reminded me of the comments where you talked about the possibility of the Bears trading for a coach. And that at the time, an unnamed coach said to you, why not me? Why did I immediately think that this is Kevin O'Connell thanks to this piece of information coming out?
Look at Mike.
I have no comment.
Look, and Kevin O'Connell was the end of a contract, right?
Again, over the years, that it is frowned upon in media circles to engage in speculation as to who someone's source might be.
I'm sorry, I was not aware
of
that.
It's okay. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I have been chastised, I'm tongue in cheek. I've been chastised fist in mouth by reporters for guessing who their sources are to try to help the audience better understand what's going on. And I think I've managed to filibuster my way past that question. But that story from Seth Wickersham, I loved it because I thought I'd lost my mind last year. Because I was hearing all that same stuff. He doesn't want to go to the Bears. They're trying to come up with creative ways to circumvent the draft. And then all of a sudden, everything's fine. It's like, what happened? And I think at the end of the day, and I think this is an indication of how hard it is in today's climate to push back against the draft process, which the fans regard as some sort of mystical Harry Potter sorting hat exercise. Wow. It's such a big deal now that at the end of the day, Caleb Williams didn't want his dad to become the guy who takes the flack for pushing back against the Bears. And if anybody's ever going to do it, again, it's going to be Arch Manning, because he's got Peyton, he's got Eli, he's got his grandpa who took the lead 21 years ago with Eli when he was going to be drafted by the Chargers. I think it's very hard. I think that's the big takeaway from that story. It is so hard in this day and age to be guy who pushes back against the sorting hat process. And look, it's worked out. It's worked out. They have Ben Johnson. Everything should be fine moving forward. But yeah, I'm a big proponent, especially quarterbacks. Top of the draft, I don't like the idea that you have no say in where you're going to go. Look at all the quarterbacks the Jets have ruined. I don't want to go to the Jets. I don't want to go to a dysfunctional team. I don't want to go to a team with a defensive head coach and an offensive coordinator I may not believe in. I don't want to do that. I want to go to a team with a head coach who's an offensive coordinator and a quarterback whisperer is going to get the most out of my talents. That's fair. Anyone should want that for their son, their nephew, their cousin, their client, their whoever. That's what we should want. But I think the ship has long sailed on the ability to effectively push back with a public attack on the team that holds your draft rights.
Well, yeah. And the reality is, this was not investigative journalism. This was an embedded author working on a book. Yeah, that process and the willingness to understand the information will be disseminated, I think, is part of this as well.
Well, that's right. I was stunned that Carl Williams was so candid about it. And, you know, that's the difference between somebody who's reporting for right now and somebody who's reporting for some vague, undetermined date down the road. It's a lot easier to be candid when you're not going to see your words tomorrow. But there is going to be a reckoning at some point. And I think it's unfortunate for Caleb that now he's in the middle of this storm because, you know, we've all moved on. It doesn't matter. He's made the commitment. He signed the 4-year contract. He didn't push back. He didn't try to avoid the Bears. He's the Bears' starting quarterback, and he'll be there for, if they want him, if they want to keep him there, at least 7, possibly 8 years before he could leave as a free agent. So I think we need to understand the context. He did show up. He did sign the contract. He's there. He wants to be there, and now he has a coach who can maybe get the most out of his skills.
Agreed. And Deion Sanders being the latest of the pushback thing not working. So I agree with you completely, Mike.
Well, I thought he was going to do it, and I think maybe he realized as well. First of all, you got to have a player who is high enough in the pecking order that it actually is a card you can play. But Arch Manning is the one I'm watching. If Arch Manning, and now look, the right team may tank whatever year he's coming out, and it's not an issue. But if the team with the rights to get him, assuming he's a top prospect, if he doesn't want to go there and he doesn't push back, no one's ever going to push back again.
It's true. Yeah. The biggest name is the one who has to elicit change many times. Mike, I'm sorry I listened too much. I was thinking in my mind, I had to go straight to the source. I apologize.
It was a good moment. I never complain about a good moment. It was fun.
Appreciate you, Mike.
I do not divulge my sources, but I have no problem with the question that you asked.
I figured as much. At least you know we're consuming the content. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, we appreciate it. Good luck out there in the public when you get your groceries and food or whatever
you.
Else.
Thank you, Mike.
Have a great day. See ya.
That was Mike Florio. We are getting you ready for Cubs baseball. The Cubs and Marlins wrap up their series today in Miami. Pre-game coverage begins in a few minutes at 11:35. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer have first pitch at 12:10 on the Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
And don't forget, you can join Mark Grody from 1 to 3 p.m. tomorrow at the Verizon store at 630 Grand Avenue in Gurnee. 3 pairs of tickets will be given away to Cubs on Deck on May 28th at Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville with special guest Ian Happ will be there. Cubs on Deck, powered by Verizon. Learn more about Verizon's deals for Military Appreciation Month at your local Verizon store.
And again, thanks to all of our servicemen and women who participate. Thank you for your service. Our service people are important. So anytime we can get that in, I feel like it's important to say.
Yeah. Now we're on to the Cubs. And the Cubs, a chance to go 7-2 in this 9-game stretch.
I love the Marshall benchmarks. I think we need some sort of a measurement system.
Well, I'm just 7-2 is my measurement, like,
right, but like the Marshall scale of record, you know, like I've got to figure out how we say it.
Let me know.
There's got to be something there.
Let me know. We can discuss this in a brainstorming session.
I think that is fair. Just a friendly reminder about your Cubs lineup today as we get you ready for that third game of this series. Cade Horton is starting. He's looking for his third win of the season. Ian Happ is set to bat leadoff. Then it is Kyle Tucker as DH. Seiya Suzuki is in right field. P. Crow Armstrong is batting cleanup. Marshall is happy about this. It is interesting to see what's going to happen.
I
worry that
people,
he's going to want to hit for a grand slam every time.
Seiya Suzuki, 2 outs, runners in scoring position, .423 batting average, .531 on base, and a .962 slug.
There it is. Michael Busch is batting fifth. He is playing at first base. Dansby Swanson, your shortstop. Nico Horner, Miguel Amaya catching. And Matt Shaw batting ninth. He is at third. Thanks to Ray Diaz, Robbie Triana, Jenna Duddleston, Connor O'Donnell, Matt Anaya, and Brandon Fryer. Thanks to you for joining us for this one.